entire state. Lawyers hated no one more than other lawyers who might sue them. For the time being, she was stuck. She'd made it through the conference, but vowed not to put herself in that kind of situation again. She'd avoid the break room and be a bit more cautious about working late, especially when she knew Ken would be there. For now, that was all she could do, aside from pray that he turned his sights back on one of the paralegals. It was yet another example of the ways in which life had turned out to be more difficult than she'd imagined it would. When she'd started her first real job, she'd been idealistic. Life had seemed more like an adventure. She'd fully believed that she had a meaningful role to play in keeping the streets safe and in giving victims a way to seek justice and redress. But over time, she'd begun to grow jaded about the entire process. It had become evident that even dangerous criminals often went free. The clogged wheels of the system turned impossibly slowly, and her caseload was never ending. Now she was living again in the city where she'd grown up and practicing a kind of law vastly different from what she'd known as an assistant DA. While she'd been certain that things would be better once she was settled in, she'd slowly come to realize that job stress simply came in different flavors, and this one wasn't much better tasting than the one before it. She'd been surprised by that, but then she'd been surprised by almost everything in the last 7 years. The world might view her as a young, homeowning professional, but there were moments when she felt like she was faking the whole thing. Part of it was financial. After paying her bills at the end of the month, she had less spending money than she'd had as a teenager. But the other part was that most of her friends from college were already married, and some of them already had kids. When she talked to them, most came across as completely content, as though their lives were unfolding exactly as they'd planned, while she, on the other hand, had a sex-crazed boss, a condo she could barely afford, and a younger sister who seemed simultaneously wiser and more carefree than Maria was. If this was adulthood, she wondered now why she'd been in such a rush to grow up in the first place. For the next hour, she pulled steadily at the paddle, the board gliding forward as she did her best to enjoy her surroundings. She noted the slowly shifting clouds and the trees reflected in the water. She concentrated on the salty, fresh scent of the breeze and basked in the warmth of the sun on her arms and shoulders. Every now and then she snapped a photograph, including a good one of an osprey clasping a fish in its talons as it rose from the water. It was too shadowed in the viewfinder and a little too distant, but with enough work in Photoshop, it might be something worth keeping. When she finally returned home, she showered and poured herself a glass of wine, then sat in a rocking chair she'd placed in the small confines of her rear porch. She watched people as they walked along Market Street, idly wondering what their lives were like. She liked to invent stories about them. That one's probably visiting from New York, or I'll bet that mom is taking her kids out for ice cream. It was a harmless, relaxing capstone to a weekend that had its share of both highs and lows. Like the blown tire, which reminded her that she'd have to run out tomorrow to get it replaced. But when? She knew that while she'd been out of the office at the conference, Barney had filled her inbox with work. They also had two important meetings in the afternoon, which wasn't going to make it easy. Nor did she have any idea what Ken's next move would be. The sense of dread intensified the following morning, when she spotted Ken speaking with Barney in his office while she chatted with Len, the voluptuous, though less than efficient, paralegal assigned to Barney's team. Ken and Barney often met before the Monday morning meeting, but what was unusual was that after Ken left Barney's office, he'd simply nodded at her without smiling before striding down the hallway. Part of her was relieved by the brevity of the encounter, but at the same time, the sudden frosty professionalism left a bad feeling in her stomach, because it no doubt meant he was angry at her. A few minutes later, Jill poked her head in to apologize for the blind date, clearly mortified. They talked for a few minutes. Jill was heading out of town for the rest of the week for depositions, and Maria repeated to Jill the story she'd told Serena about her flat tire and the stranger who had rescued her, which only made Jill feel even worse. As soon as Jill left, Maria started calling garages, trying to find some place close where she could get her tire changed after work, but soon discovered that all of them would be closed by the time she arrived. Her only option was to try to get it done over her lunch hour. It took 6 attempts before she was finally able to snag an appointment at 12:30, cutting it close for the initial client meeting at 1:30. She warned Barney that she might be a few minutes late getting back. He frowned but told her to do her best, emphasizing that her presence was important. She left the office at 11:45, hoping that the mechanics would be able to start early. But they didn't start early. Nor did they even start on time. In the end, she spent the next hour waiting, alternating between panic and slowly mounting fury, making calls to Barney's secretary and the paralegal, as well as to Barney's cell phone. It wasn't until after 2 that she was finally able to reclaim her car and speed back to the office. By the time she reached the conference room, the meeting had been in progress for nearly 45 minutes. An icy stare from Barney signaled his displeasure, belying his slow, easy drawl as he welcomed her into the conference room. After the meeting, she apologized profusely to Barney. He was clearly irate. Gone was any trace of the friendly grandfather that clients were accustomed to. Things remained tense between them for the rest of the afternoon. It was no better the following day, and pouring herself into the various tasks at hand, Maria caught up on the matters she'd ignored while at the conference, in addition to preparing the documents she knew Barney needed for a trial the following week. She labored past midnight on both Monday and Tuesday, and with Jill out of the office, she worked through her lunch hours all week, eating takeout at her desk while toiling on various briefs. Barney apparently didn't notice or care, and it wasn't until Thursday that his icy demeanor began to thaw. Later that afternoon, however, as she was finishing up a conversation with Barney in his office concerning an insurance claim that they both strongly suspected was fraudulent, she heard a voice behind her. Looking up, she saw Ken standing in the doorway. "Excuse me," he said, addressing them both but mainly focusing on Barney. "Would you mind if I spoke to Maria for a moment?"
"Not at all," Barney drawled. He nodded at Maria. "Give them a ring and let them know that we'll need to set a conference call for tomorrow."
"Absolutely. I'll let you know what they say," Maria responded. She could feel Ken staring at her, could feel the tightness in her chest as she turned to face him. By then, Ken had already turned to leave, and without a word, she followed him down the hallway and through the reception area. Her feet dragged when she realized he was heading toward his office. As they approached, his secretary averted her gaze. Ken held the door open for her, then closed it behind him. All business now, he moved behind his desk and gestured for her to sit in the chair opposite. He gazed out the window before finally turning to face her.
"Barney mentioned to me that you missed an important client meeting on Monday."
"I didn't miss it. I was late."
"I didn't call you here to quibble over the details," he said, cutting her off. "Would you care to explain what happened?"
Caught off guard, Maria stammered out an admittedly pathetic account of her attempts to find a suitable garage and the events that had followed. When she had finished, he said nothing for a moment.
"You do understand what we do here, right? And why you were hired? Our clients expect a certain level of professionalism."
"Yes, of course I do. And I know our clients are important."
"Did you know that Barney was thinking of allowing you the opportunity to act as lead counsel on this matter? And that you took this opportunity off the table because you felt the suddenly urgent, desperate need to change your tire during business hours?"
Maria flushed, her thoughts spinning at this new revelation. "No, he didn't mention that," she sputtered. "And like I said, I wanted to get it done after work, but every place would have already been closed. I honestly thought I could get back in time. I knew there was a risk, but..."
"A risk you were clearly more than willing to take," he observed, again cutting her off.
She opened her mouth to respond, but by then, she knew already that there was nothing she could say to appease him. In the silence, Maria felt a knot form in her stomach as Ken finally took a seat at his desk.
"I must say that I'm very disappointed in your decision," he said, sounding in control. "We took the risk of hiring you because I, among others, went to bat for you. Your work at the DA's office was hardly relevant to our practice here, as you know. But I thought you had potential. Now, I'm not sure what to think or whether I made the wrong decision."
"I'm really sorry. It won't happen again."
"I hope not. For your sake, not mine."
The knot in her stomach grew even larger. "What can I do to make things right?"
"For now, nothing," I'll talk to Barney and find out what he thinks, and then we'll let you know what we decide.
Should I call the clients, perhaps try to apologize?
I think you should do nothing for now. I said that Barney and I will discuss it. But if something like this ever happens again...
He leaned forward, turning on his desk lamp.
It won't, she whispered, still trying to get her bearings. Barney was thinking about making her lead counsel? Why hadn't he mentioned that to her?
In that instant, the phone on the desk rang and Ken picked it up. After announcing his name, he nodded before covering the mouthpiece.
I've got to take this call. We'll finish our talk at another time.
The way he said it left no doubt that they'd talk again, and Maria rose from her seat, humiliated and panicked. Her thoughts in disarray, she stumbled out of Ken's office. Passing his secretary, she was grateful that the woman ignored her. When she reached her office, she shut the door and ran through the conversation again. Despite herself, she wondered just how long she would be able to continue working there, or whether she'd even be given a choice. Chapter 3. Colin. On the Monday after his fight, Colin stepped out of his apartment and was ambling toward the old Camaro when he suddenly spotted Detective Pete Margolis. The cop had parked in the street out front and was leaning against the hood of his sedan, holding a to-go cup of coffee, a toothpick in his mouth. Unlike most of the officers Colin had dealt with in the past, Margolis spent almost as much time in the gym as Colin did. His sleeves were rolled up, the fabric straining against his biceps. He was in his late 30s, his dark hair swept back and greased in place with God knows what. Once, sometimes twice a month, he would show up unannounced to check on Colin as part of Colin's court-ordered deal. Margolis clearly enjoyed the power he had over his charge.
You look like hell, Hancock, he said as Colin drew near. You do anything I should know about?
No, Colin answered.
You sure about that?
Colin watched Margolis instead of answering. He knew the guy would eventually get around to whatever he wanted to say. Margolis moved his toothpick from one side of his mouth to the other.
There was a brawl in the parking lot at Crazy Horse a little after midnight. Bunch of guys swinging bottles at each other. Few cars in the lot got dented up, and there was a man knocked unconscious. Witnesses said he'd been kicked in the head after he was on the ground. Right now, he's in the hospital with a cracked skull. That's assault with a deadly weapon, you know. And as soon as I heard about it, I thought to myself, how familiar that sounded. Didn't I arrest you for something like that right here in Wilmington? Just a few years ago. And haven't you been in a couple of scrapes since then?
Margolis already knew the answers, but Colin answered anyway. Yes to the first, no to the second.
Oh, that's right, because your friends intervened. The goofy guy and the hot blonde chick, right?
Colin said nothing. Margolis stared. Colin continued to wait until Margolis finally went on.
That's why I'm here, by the way.
Okay.
Just okay.
Colin said nothing. He had learned to say as little as possible in the presence of the police.
Put yourself in my shoes, Margolis finally went on. The thing is, pretty much everyone scattered as soon as the sirens started closing in. A couple of witnesses stuck around and I talked to them, but I figured I was just wasting my time. It's a lot easier to go straight to the source, don't you think?
Colin hitched his backpack a little higher on his shoulder.
Are we done here?
Not quite. I don't think you understand what's going on.
I understand, but none of this concerns me. I wasn't there.
Can you prove that?
Can you prove otherwise?
Margolis took a sip of his coffee, then fished a fresh toothpick from his pocket. He took his time, placing it in his mouth.
That almost sounds like you're trying to hide something.
It was just a question, Colin said.
All right, then. Let's get to the questions. Where were you Saturday night?
In Jacksonville.
Oh, yeah, he said. The fight. MMA stuff, right? You told me about that. Did you win?
Margolis didn't care, and Colin knew it. He watched Margolis take another sip of coffee.
The point is, we were able to get a couple of descriptions from the witnesses. and it turns out that the guy who did the kicking was in his mid-20s, muscular with tattoos on his arms and short brown hair, almost a buzz cut. And wouldn't you know it, it turns out that the guy was pretty bruised up even before the fight started. People had seen him inside. And because I knew you'd just been fighting in Jacksonville, well, it doesn't take a genius to figure out what happened. Colin wondered how much, if any, of Margolis' story was true. Do you have any other questions for me? Margolis shifted the toothpick again while setting his coffee on the hood. Were you at the Crazy Horse on Saturday night? No. You didn't even stop by for a few minutes? No. And if I have a witness that says he saw you there, then he's lying. But you're not. Again, Colin didn't answer. There was no reason to. And part of him suspected that even Margolis knew it, because after a long moment, he crossed his arms, his muscles flexing almost, but not entirely, involuntarily. If the detective really had something, Colin knew he would have already been arrested. All right, Margolis said. Then answer this. Where were you between midnight and 1 a.m. on Sunday? Colin sorted through his memory. I wasn't watching the clock, but I was either about to leave Trey's Diner on Highway 17, or driving home, or changing some lady's tire during the storm. I was home right around 1:30. Trey's Diner? Why the hell would you eat there? I was hungry. What time did you leave Jacksonville? It was after midnight, maybe 5 or 10 minutes after, but I don't know for sure. Witnesses? Dozens. And I assume you ate alone at Trey's? I was with my landlord. Margolis snorted. Evan? One half of the dynamic duo, that's convenient. Colin flexed his jaw, ignoring the barb. I'm sure the waitress will remember the two of us. Because you look like you had your face run through a meat grinder. No, because Evan stood out in a place like that. Margolis smirked, but business was business. So you left the diner? Yes. Alone? Yes. Evan left a few minutes before I did. He drove his own car. So there's no one who can say where you went afterwards. I already told you what happened after that. Oh, that's right. You changed a lady's tire. Yes. In the storm? Yes. Did you know her? No. Then why did you stop? Because I thought she might need my help. Margolis considered Colin's answer, no doubt thinking that Colin had been caught in a mistake. How could you know she might need help unless you'd already stopped? I saw she needed a hand getting the tire out. I stopped and got out of the car. I offered to help. She said no at first. She asked if she could borrow my phone and call her sister. I let her use my phone, and she called her sister. And then she asked for my help in changing her tire. I changed it. Then I got in my car and drove straight home. What time was this? I don't know, but a call was made from my phone from the woman to her sister. If you'd like, I'll show you my call log. By all means. Colin reached into his back pocket and pulled out his phone. A few taps and the call log was on display, confirming his alibi. He showed it to Margolis. Margolis took out his pad and made a point to slowly jot the number down. No doubt it was right around the time of the brawl because his biceps flexed again. How do I know that's the number for the lady's sister? You don't. But you're fine if I call and check. Do what you want. It's your time that you'll be wasting. Margolis's eyes narrowed slightly. You think you're pretty smart, don't you? No. Oh yeah, you do. But you know what? You're not. Colin didn't answer, and for a long moment they continued to stare at each other. Margolis grabbed his coffee again and circled back to the driver's side door. I'm going to check this out, you know, because you and I both know that you don't belong on the streets. Guy like you. How many people have you sent to the hospital over the years? You're violent, and while you think you can control it forever, you can't. And when that happens, I'm going to be there. And I'll be the first one to say, I told you so. A moment later, the sedan was pulling away, Colin watching until it finally vanished around the corner. What was that about? Colin turned around and spotted Evan on the porch.
Already dressed for work, his friend stepped down and started up the walk.
The usual.
What was it this time?
Fight at the Crazy Horse.
When?
When I was with you, or driving, or changing a tire.
I might be your alibi this time?
I doubt it. He knows it wasn't me, or he would have brought me in and questioned me at the station.
Then why the big show?
Colin shrugged. It was a rhetorical question, since they both already knew the answer. Colin motioned toward his friend.
Isn't that the tie Lily bought for your birthday?
Evan looked down to examine it. It was paisley, a kaleidoscope of color.
Yes, it is, as a matter of fact, good memory.
What do you think?
Too much?
It doesn't matter what I think.
But you don't like it.
I think that if you want to wear it, you should wear it.
Evan seemed momentarily undecided.
Why do you do that?
Do what?
Refuse to answer a simple question.
Because my opinion is irrelevant, you should wear what you want.
Just tell me, okay?
I don't like your tie.
Really? Why not?
Because it's ugly.
It's not ugly.
Colin nodded.
Okay.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Probably.
You don't even wear ties.
You're right.
So why do I care what you think?
I don't know.
Evan scowled.
Talking to you can be infuriating, you know?
I know. You've said that before.
Of course I've said it before, because it's true. Didn't we just talk about this the other night? You don't have to say whatever pops into your head.
But you asked.
Just,
forget it.
He turned and started back toward the house.
I'll talk to you later, okay? Where are you going?
Evan walked a couple of steps before answering without turning around.
To change my damn tie. And by the way, Margolis was right. Your face still looks like it was run through a meat grinder.
Colin smiled.
Hey, Evan.
Evan stopped and turned.
What?
Thanks.
For what?
For everything.
Yeah, you're just lucky I won't tell Lily what you said.
You can if you'd like, I already told her.
Evan stared. Of course you did.
In class, Colin sat in the third row, taking notes and trying to concentrate on what the teacher was saying. The class focused on language and literacy development, and in the first few weeks of school, he'd been of two minds about it. First, thinking that most of what the professor was saying struck him as common sense, which made him wonder what he'd gain from being there. And second, that there might be some as-yet unknown advantage to quantifying common sense into some sort of cohesive classroom strategy so he'd be able to put together formal lesson plans. The only problem was that the professor, a neurotic middle-aged woman with a sing-song voice, tended to wander from one subject to the next, which made paying attention somewhat difficult. He was in his third year of college, but it was his first semester at UNC Wilmington. His first 2 years had been spent at Cape Fear Community College, where he'd finished with a perfect GPA. So far, he couldn't tell whether the classes were harder here or there. In the end, that would come down to the difficulty of the exams and the quality expected of his papers. He wasn't too concerned. He made a point to read ahead whenever possible, and he knew Lily would help him study, quizzing him when he needed it in addition to helping him edit his papers. As a rule, he liked to put in at least 25 hours a week of studying, in addition to time in class. Whenever he had a break on campus, he wandered to the library, and so far it seemed to be paying off. Unlike many of the students who were here for both an education and a social life, he was here only to learn as much as he could and get the best grades possible. He'd already done the sow your wild oats thing. In fact, it had been all he could do to escape it. Still, he felt pretty good about having made it to this point. He had Evan and Lily, he had his MMA training, and a place he called his own. He wasn't too fond of his job. The restaurant where he bartended was too touristy for his own tastes, but it wasn't the kind of place that led to him getting into any kind of trouble. Most people came there to eat, including lots of families with kids, and those who sat at the bar were usually waiting for a table or having dinner. It was certainly a far cry from the kind of bar he used to frequent. During his wild years, he'd favored pro bars for professional alcoholics, those dark and dingy out-of-the-way dives with or without blaring music in the background. He'd expected problems almost as soon as he walked in the door, and the world had obliged him. These days, he avoided places like that at all costs. He knew his triggers and his limits, and though he'd come a long way in keeping his anger in check, there was always the possibility that he'd find himself in a situation that quickly spiraled out of control. And there was no doubt in his mind that even if he was involved in an incident in another state, Margolis would find out, and he'd live in a cage for the next decade, surrounded by people who had the same kind of anger problems as he did. Realizing that he was drifting, he forced himself to focus on the lecture again. The professor was telling them that some teachers found it beneficial to read passages from books that were age-appropriate, as opposed to books that were geared toward older or younger students. He wondered whether to jot that down in his notes. Did he really need to remind himself of that in the future? Before deciding, oh, what the hell. If she thought it was important enough to say, he'd make a note of it. It was around that point, however, that he noticed a dark-haired girl peeking at him over her shoulder. While he'd drawn the expected stares when he'd entered the classroom, even the professor had done a double take and broken off in mid-sentence, by now, the stares had been redirected toward the front of the room. Except for this girl. Definitely watching him, almost scrutinizing. He didn't get the sense that she was flirting. Rather, it was almost like she was trying to figure him out. Not that it mattered to him one way or the other, stare or not, it was her choice. When class finished a few minutes later, Colin closed his notebook and stuffed it into his backpack. Flinging his backpack over his shoulder, he winced when it thumped against his bruised ribs. After classes, he planned to head to the gym to work out, but he wasn't up for contact just yet. No sparring or grappling, just weights, core work, and a half hour of jumping rope. He'd take a break for a bit, then pop in his earbuds and run 5 miles while listening to the kind of music his parents had always hated. And after that, he'd shower and get ready for work. He wondered how his boss was going to react when she saw him. He suspected she wouldn't be pleased. His face wouldn't exactly blend in with the touristy atmosphere. But what could he do? With an hour until his next class, he began walking toward the library. He had a paper to write, and though he'd gotten a start on it last week, he wanted to finish the first draft in the next couple of days, which wasn't going to be easy. Between training and work, he had to utilize his limited free time efficiently. Still sore from the fight, he walked slowly, noting the reactions of the girls who passed him. They were nearly uniform. They'd spot him and do a quick double take, revealing expressions of shock and fear, and then pretend not to have even noticed him at all. The thought amused him. A single boo would likely send them fleeing in the opposite direction. As he turned onto a different walkway, a voice called out from behind him, "Hey, wait up! You up there!" Certain it wasn't directed at him, he ignored it. "Hey, you with the hurt face! I said wait up!" It took Colin a second to make sure he had heard right, but when he stopped and turned, he spotted the dark-haired girl from class, waving. He glanced over his shoulder. No one else was paying attention. As she finally closed in, he recognized her as the girl who'd been watching him in class. "Are you talking to me?" "You think?" she said, stopping a few feet away. "Who else has a hurt face around here?" He wasn't sure whether to be offended or laugh, but she said it in a way that made it impossible to take umbrage. "Do I know you?"
"We're in class together."
"I know. I saw you staring at me, but I still don't know you."
"You're right," she said. "We're strangers, but may I ask you a question?"
He knew exactly what was coming. The whole hurt face thing was the tip-off, and he hitched up his backpack. "I was in a fight."
"Obviously," she said, "but that's not what I wanted to ask you. I wanted to know how old you are."
He blinked in surprise. "I'm 28. Why?"
"That's perfect," she said, not answering his question. "Where are you going?"
"To the library."
"Good, me too. May I join you? I think we should talk."
"Why?"
She smiled, vaguely reminding him of someone else. "If we talk, you can find out."
Chapter 4. Maria.
"Where are we going again?"
Maria asked from the driver's seat. She'd picked up Serena half an hour earlier on South Front Street, which ran parallel to the Cape Fear River.
Serena had been standing at an intersection in an area dotted with older office buildings and occasional clusters of shacks and boathouses at the river's edge, oblivious to the construction workers across the street who were clearly ogling her. Slowly but surely, the area was being revitalized, like the rest of the waterfront along the river, but for now, it was a work in progress.
And why did I have to pick you up?
I've already told you. We're going to a restaurant, Serena answered.
And you picked me up because I don't plan on driving tonight, since I might have a couple of drinks.
She tossed a lock of hair over her shoulder.
The interview went well, by the way. Charles said he found my answers very thoughtful. Thanks for asking.
Maria rolled her eyes.
How did you get there?
Steve dropped me off.
I think he likes me. He's meeting me here later.
He has to like you if he's willing to put up with this traffic. Though the first half of September had passed, the heat was more reminiscent of early August, and the shore was packed. Maria had already circled the block twice, searching for a place to park.
Who cares? We're at the beach. There are better places to eat downtown.
How would you know? Have you even been to Wrightsville Beach since you moved back?
No. My point exactly. You live in Wilmington. You need to get to the beach every now and then.
I paddleboard, remember? I see the beach a lot more than you do.
I mean someplace with actual people around, not just birds and turtles and the occasional jumping fish. You need to go someplace fun with a great view and a lot of atmosphere.
Krabby Pete's?
It's a local institution.
It's a tourist trap.
So what? I've never been there, and I want to find out what the big deal is.
Maria brought her lips together.
Why am I getting the sense that there's more to this than you're saying?
Because you're a lawyer. You're suspicious of everything.
Maybe. Or it could simply be that you've got something planned.
What makes you say that?
Because it's Saturday night. We never go out on Saturday night. You've never wanted to go out with me on Saturday night.
That's why we're having an early dinner, Serena answered.
There are a bunch of bands playing in the bars down here this weekend, and Steve and I and a few friends are going to listen to some music before we hit the parties. They don't get going till 10 or 11 anyway, so there's plenty of time.
Maria knew that Serena had something up her sleeve, but couldn't quite put her finger on it.
I hope you don't expect me to tag along.
Not a chance, Serena huffed.
You're way too old for that. It would be like going out with our parents.
Gee, thanks.
Don't blame me. You're the one who said you were too old for guys my age.
Why? Are you changing your mind?
No. That's why we're just having dinner.
Maria suddenly spotted another car vacating a spot, and she turned, closing in on it. It was still a block or two from the restaurant, but she doubted she'd be able to get any closer. As she parked, she couldn't shake the feeling that Serena was being way too coy, and Serena seemed to realize it.
Stop worrying so much. You're killing the mood. What's wrong with spending a little time with your sister?
Maria hesitated.
Fine, but just so we're clear, if you're planning to have some other guy join us at the table or something crazy like that, I'm not going to be happy.
I'm not Jill and Paul, okay? I wouldn't set you up on some awful blind date without even asking you.
But if it makes you feel any better, I can guarantee that no guy will sit with us. In fact, we'll just eat at the bar. The view is supposed to be better anyway. Deal?
Maria debated before finally shutting off the engine.
Deal.
Located next to one of the piers at Wrightsville Beach, Krabby Pete's had been around for nearly 40 years. Having barely survived one hurricane after the next, the structure might have been condemned had not numerous repairs of varying quality been undertaken over the years. The building sported peeling paint, a listing rooftop, and more than a few missing or broken shutters. Despite its appearance, the restaurant was bustling, and Maria and Serena had to squeeze through the crowd waiting for tables as they made for the stairs leading to the rooftop bar. Following her sister, Maria noticed the wooden tables, mismatched chairs, and personalized graffiti on the walls. From the ceiling hung items that the original Pete, who'd passed away years ago, had supposedly found in his nets while fishing. Hubcaps and tennis shoes, deflated basketballs, a woman's bra, toys, and scores of license plates from more than 10 states.
Pretty cool, huh?
Serena called over her shoulder.
It's certainly crowded.
It's an experience, come on.
They climbed the creaking steps to the rooftop. Emerging into the sun, Maria squinted under a cloudless sky. Unlike in the restaurant downstairs, the tables up here were occupied by adults unwinding with open bottles of beer or mixed drinks in front of them. Three waitresses in shorts and black tank tops scurried among the customers, efficiently picking up empties and dropping off drinks. Half the tables had 10 pails filled with crab legs, and she watched as diners cracked the shells to get to the meat.
"We're in luck," Serena said. "There are two seats at the bar."
The bar was on the far side, partially covered with a rusting tin awning and fronted by 10 stools. Maria followed Serena, winding between the tables in the fierce sun. It was cooler in the shade of the bar's awning, though, and as they took their seats, she could feel the salt-tinged breeze lifting the long hair off her neck. Over Serena's shoulder, Maria could see the waves breaking on the shore, blue changing suddenly to white and back again. Even though it was almost dinner time, hundreds of beachgoers still frolicked in the water or sprawled on towels. The pier was jammed with people, leaning over the railing with their fishing poles, waiting for something to strike. Serena took in the scene before swiveling back to Maria.
"Admit it," Serena challenged. "This is exactly what you needed. Say that I was right."
"Fine, you were right."
"I love it when you say that," she crowed. "Now, let's get something to drink. What are you in the mood for?"
"Just a glass of wine."
No,
Serena declared, suddenly shaking her head.
"You're not having a glass of wine here. This isn't a glass of wine kind of place. We need to do something beachy, like we're on vacation. A piña colada or a margarita or something like that."
"Seriously?
You really have to learn to live a little."
Serena leaned over the bar.
"Hey, Colin, can we get a couple of drinks?"
Maria hadn't noticed the bartender, and her eyes followed Serena's. Dressed in faded jeans and a white-collared shirt rolled to the elbows, he was finishing up an order for a waitress on the far side. Maria noticed automatically that he was exceptionally fit, with well-defined shoulders tapering down to narrow hips. He wore his hair very short, almost in a buzz cut, that revealed an intricate tattooed ivy design wrapping around the back of his neck. Though his back was turned, Maria was impressed by how efficiently he moved as he readied the cocktails. She leaned toward her sister.
"I thought you said you've never been here before."
"I haven't."
"Then how do you know the bartender's name?"
"My friend works here."
At Serena's answer, the bartender turned. With his face partially shadowed, his features weren't immediately visible, and it wasn't until he stepped closer that Maria noticed the fading bruise on his cheek, and all at once, it came together. The bartender froze for a second as well, no doubt mirroring her own thoughts.
"You've got to be kidding."
In the awkward moment that followed, Maria had the impression that while he wasn't thrilled by Serena's surprise, he wasn't necessarily upset by it either. He resumed his approach until he was standing right in front of them. Leaning forward, he rested his hand on the bar, revealing the sculpted, colorfully tattooed muscle of his forearm. "Hey, Serena," he said. His unhurried, confident voice was exactly as Maria remembered. "You decided to come." Serena seemed content to act as though she hadn't orchestrated the whole scenario.
"I figured, why not? It's a gorgeous day."
She spread her arms wide.
"What a great place. You were right about the view from up here. It's incredible. Has it been busy today?"
"I've been overrun."
"No wonder. Who wouldn't want to come on a day like today? Oh, by the way, this is my sister, Maria."
Colin's gaze met hers, unreadable except for a trace of amusement somewhere in its depths. Up close, his appearance was nothing like it had been on the night he changed her tire. With his high cheekbones, blue-gray eyes, and long lashes, it was easy to imagine him picking up almost any woman he wanted. "Hi, Maria," he said, extending his hand across the bar. "I'm Colin." She took his hand in hers, feeling a restrained strength in his grip. Letting go, she watched as his gaze flickered from her to Serena and back again. "What can I get you?" he asked. Serena studied them both before finally propping her elbows on the bar.
"How about a couple of piña coladas?"
"Coming right up," he said easily. Turning around, he grabbed the blender and bent over to reach into the refrigerator, his jeans growing tight around his thighs. Maria watched as he added the ingredients before turning her narrowed gaze on Serena.
"Really?"
Maria said, more a statement than a question.
"What?"
Serena asked, sounding pleased with herself.
"This is why we came? Because you wanted us to meet? You're the one who said you never had a chance to thank him. Now's your chance."
Maria shook her head, amazed.
"How did you... Colin's in my class."
She reached for a bucket of peanuts on the bar and snapped one of them open.
"Actually, he's in two of my classes, but we really only met this week. While we were getting to know each other, he mentioned that he worked here and that he had a shift this afternoon. I thought it might be fun for us to drop in and say hello."
"Of course you did."
"What's the big deal? We'll be out of here soon, and you can head back home and take up knitting mittens for cats or whatever. Don't make this into something that it isn't."
"Why should I? You've already done that."
"Talk to him. Don't talk to him,"
Serena said, reaching for another peanut.
"It doesn't matter to me. It's your life, not mine. And besides, we're already here. Let's just enjoy it, okay?"
"I really hate that you..."
"In case you're interested,"
Serena interrupted,
"Colin is actually a very nice guy. Smart, too. And you have to admit he's kind of hot as far as bartenders go."
She lowered her voice to a whisper.
"I actually think his tattoos are sexy,"
she said, nodding toward him.
"I'll bet he's got some more that aren't visible, too."
Maria struggled to find words.
"I think,"
she sputtered, trying to sort through it all and experiencing the same sort of confusion she had on the night she'd first met Colin.
"Can we please just have our drinks and go?"
Serena made a face.
"But I'm hungry."
Colin returned with their drinks and set the foamy glasses in front of them. "Anything else?" he asked. Before Maria could decline, Serena raised her voice over the sound of the crowd.
"Could we have a menu?"
Serena pointedly ignored Maria's obvious discomfort all through dinner. Still, Maria had to admit that it wasn't as uncomfortable as she'd feared, mostly because Colin was too busy to treat them as anything other than ordinary customers. He mentioned nothing about changing Maria's tire or about his classes with Serena. Because of the crowd at the bar, he had barely enough time to keep up with orders. He hustled continuously from one end of the bar to the other, taking orders and making drinks, closing out bills, and getting the waitresses what they needed. In the next hour, the rooftop only became more crowded, and despite the addition of a second bartender a few minutes after they'd arrived, a pretty blonde, perhaps a year older than Serena, the wait for drinks continued to grow. If there was any indication that Colin knew Serena at all, it was that their dinner order was taken and delivered promptly, as was a second round of drinks. He cleared their plates moments after they finished and dropped off the bill, which he also closed out as soon as Maria laid down her credit card. Meanwhile, Serena kept up a steady flow of lively chatter. There were even moments when Maria forgot about Colin entirely, though from time to time she found her gaze flickering his way. Serena hadn't said anything more about him, but Maria thought he seemed too old to be a college student. She supposed she could ask Serena about that, but she didn't want to give her the satisfaction, since she'd dragged Maria here under false pretenses. Despite herself, Maria had to admit that Serena was right about the fact that Colin, when he wasn't bruised, bloody, and soaking wet on a deserted stretch of road, was seriously good-looking. Oddly clean-cut, despite his tattoos and powerful build, he had a quick, almost wry grin. And as far as she could tell, all three of the waitresses had crushes on him. So did the group of women at the far end of the bar who'd shown up 20 minutes ago. She could tell by the way they smiled at him as he prepared their drinks and watched him after he'd turned away. Same thing with the other bartender. Though she was as busy as Colin, she seemed to become noticeably distracted whenever he reached past her for a glass or a bottle of liquor. Good-looking bartenders were common enough to be a cliché, as was the practice of flirting with them. But Colin's reaction to the subtle and not-so-subtle signals surprised her. Though he was pleasant with everyone, he otherwise seemed oblivious to his admirer's attention. Or at least he was acting oblivious. As she was trying to decode his motive, another older male bartender moved behind the bar, partially blocking her view of Colin. Beside her, Serena had her phone out and was texting.
I'm letting Steve and Melissa know that we're about done, Serena said, her fingers dancing.
Are they here?
They're walking this way now, she said.
When Maria just nodded, Serena went on.
He's 28, you know.
Steve?
No,
Serena answered.
Steve is my age. Colin is 28.
And?
You're 28, too.
Yes, I know.
Serena drained her drink.
I figured I might as well mention it, since you've been sneaking peeks at him all night.
No, I haven't.
You could have fooled me.
Maria reached for her own drink, feeling slightly buoyant from the alcohol.
Okay, she conceded. Maybe I did check him out once or twice. But 28 is a little too old to still be in college, don't you think?
That depends.
Depends on what?
On when he started.
Colin didn't start until a couple of years ago, so he's right on schedule.
He wants to be an elementary school teacher, just like me. And, if you're curious, his grades are probably better than mine.
He takes his classes very seriously. He sits at the front of the class and takes ridiculous notes.
Why are you telling me this?
Because it's obvious that you're interested in him.
I'm not interested in him.
You've been making that clear all night,
Serena agreed, feigning innocence.
He's definitely not the type you'd ever want to go dancing with. A guy that handsome? Please.
Maria opened her mouth to respond, but closed it again, knowing that saying anything more would only encourage her sister further. In the silence, Serena's phone pinged and she peered down at it.
Steve's downstairs. You ready to go? Or would you rather wait here for a bit?
Why, because you want me to hit on Colin?
He's not here.
Maria looked up. Sure enough, Colin was gone.
He was working the afternoon shift, so he's probably off the clock,
Serena added, sliding off her stool. She hitched her purse over her shoulder.
Thanks for dinner, by the way. Do you want to walk down with me?
Maria reached for her purse.
I thought you said you didn't want me to meet Steve.
I was kidding. He wants to be a lawyer, by the way. Maybe you can talk him out of it.
Why would I do that?
Do you really need me to answer that question after all you've been through?
Maria was silent. Serena, like their parents, knew how hard the last couple of years had been.
Still,
Serena said,
it's a shame.
What's a shame?
I know Colin was busy tonight, but you never did thank him for changing your tire. You might not want to talk to him, but it was a nice thing for him to do that night, and you could have told him so.
Again, Maria said nothing, but as she followed Serena to the stairs, she found herself thinking that her sister was, as usual, right. Steve was cute in a preppy kind of way, right down to the plaid shorts and light blue polo that matched his topsiders. He came across as nice enough, though it was apparent within minutes that he was a lot more interested in Serena than she was in him, since she spent most of her time talking to Melissa. Though Maria chided herself for it as she started in the direction of her car, she found herself envying the ease with which her younger sister seemed to navigate every facet of her life. Then again, how hard was life for a 21-year-old student? College was a bubble that kept the rest of the world at bay. There was an abundance of free time, friends who lived either with you or right next door, and an overwhelming sense of optimism about the future, even if you had no idea as to the specifics of what that might mean. In college, everyone accepted the fact that their lives would turn out exactly as planned, buoying them from one good memory to the next in a cascade of carefree 3-day weekends. She hesitated, changing her mind. Well, for people like Serena, anyway. Maria's own experience had been different because she'd taken her education more seriously than most. She could remember being way too stressed, way too often. In retrospect, she realized that she'd probably spent too much time studying and worrying about exams. She recalled working on papers until the wee hours of the morning, editing them over and over until every word was just right. At the time, it seemed like the most important thing in the world, but in the last few years, she'd begun to wonder why she'd taken it all so seriously. Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Michael Dell, and Mark Zuckerberg had dropped out of college and they'd done okay, right? They intuitively understood that the world didn't care about grades or even graduating, at least not in the long run, especially when compared to traits like creativity or persistence. Sure, her grades had likely helped her land her very first job with the district attorney's office,
But had anyone cared since then? When she'd been hired at the firm, they'd been interested only in her work experience and seemed to regard the first 24 years of her life as inconsequential. These days, Barney's conversations were centered on her current work product, and Ken's interests were of a different nature entirely. Thinking back, she regretted not taking a year off after graduation and going backpacking through Europe, or volunteering for Teach for America, or whatever. Frankly, it didn't matter what she did as long as it was something interesting. But she'd been in such a headlong rush to grow up and become an adult that those thoughts had never even entered her mind. She didn't always feel like she was really living, though. And she sometimes found herself regretting the choices she'd made. And on that subject, wasn't she too young to have these kinds of regrets anyway? Weren't those supposed to start in middle age? Lord knows her mom and dad didn't seem to have any, and they were middle-aged. Meanwhile, Serena acted as though she didn't have a care in the world either. So where had Maria gone wrong? She blamed her melancholy thoughts on the piña coladas, whose effects she was still feeling a bit. Deciding to give herself a little more time before she got behind the wheel, she squinted at the pier and decided, why not? Dusk was coming on, but she still had another hour or so before it was dark. Turning around, she started that way, watching the chaotic activity as families began to depart the beach en masse. Sunburned kids, overtired and whining, trailed their equally sunburned and overtired parents, who were hauling boogie boards, coolers, umbrellas, and towels. At the beach, she stopped to slip off her sandals, wondering if she'd recognize anyone from high school, or whether they'd recognize her, but she spotted no one familiar. She trudged through the sand, and when she reached the pier, she made her way up the steps just as the sun was beginning its slow descent. Through the slats beneath her feet, she watched as sand gave way to shallow water, then finally to waves cascading toward the shore. In either direction, surfers were still catching swells. Admiring their graceful movements, she passed people fishing, men and women, young and old, all of them lost in their own worlds. She remembered that when she had been a teenager, a boy she'd liked had once talked her into giving it a try. It was a blazing hot day, and casting was more difficult than she thought it would be. They eventually left the pier empty-handed, and she later realized that she liked the boy a lot more than she'd ever liked fishing. The crowds grew sparser the farther out she got, and by the time she reached the end of the pier, she noticed only a lone fisherman, his back toward her. He was dressed in faded jeans and a baseball cap. But from her cursory glance, she could tell that he was put together just right. Shrugging off the thought, she turned her gaze to the horizon, catching sight of the moon rising from the sea. In the distance, a catamaran glided over the surface, and she idly wondered whether Serena might be persuaded to join her on a sailing trip one weekend. "Are you following me?" The voice came from the corner of the pier. When she turned, it took a few seconds for her to register that it was Colin. The fisherman in the baseball cap, she suddenly realized. She felt heat rise in her cheeks. Had Serena set this up too? No, coming out here had been her idea, hadn't it? Serena hadn't talked about Colin or the pier, which meant this had to be a coincidence, like the night he'd pulled over and changed her tire. What were the odds of meeting him here? Too low to be plausible, and yet, he was here, and she was here, and she could tell he was waiting for an answer. "No," she stammered. "I'm not following you. I just came out here to enjoy the view." He seemed to weigh her answer. "And?"
"And what?"
"The view. How is it?" Flustered, she had to process his question before she could answer.
"It's beautiful," she finally said.
"Better than from the restaurant?"
"Different. More peaceful."
"I think so, too. That's why I'm here."
"But you're fishing."
"Not really," he said. "Like you, I'm mainly here to appreciate the scenery." He smiled before leaning over the railing. "I didn't mean to bother you," he assured her. "Enjoy the sunset, Maria." Somehow, hearing him say her name out here felt more intimate than it had in the bar, and she absently watched as he began reeling in his line. He cast again, the line unspooling into the distance, and she wondered whether she should stay or go. He seemed content to give her space, just as he'd done the night they'd first met, which reminded her.
"Hey, Colin?"
He turned his head.
Yes?
I should have thanked you for changing my tire the other night. You really saved me.
You're welcome. I was glad to help, he smiled. And I'm glad you came to the restaurant tonight, too.
That was Serena's idea.
I could tell. You didn't seem all that happy to see me.
It wasn't that. I was just surprised.
Me too.
Maria could feel his gaze lingering on her before he finally turned away. She wasn't quite sure how to respond, and for a while, the two of them simply stood there in silence. Colin seemed perfectly relaxed and self-contained, while Maria tried to immerse herself in the view once again. A shrimp boat trawled the darker waters in the distance, and over her shoulder, the lights flickered on at Krabby Pete's. The faint strains of classic rock began to drift out of one of the restaurants, signaling the beginning of the evening festivities. She studied Colin from the corner of her eye, trying to figure out why he seemed so different than other men. In her experience, men her age generally fell into one of five categories. Arrogant types who believed themselves to be one of God's favorite creations. Friendly guys who might become keepers except for the fact that they often weren't interested in relationships. Shy guys who could barely speak. Men who weren't interested in her at all for one reason or another. And really good ones, genuine keepers, who were almost always taken in her experience. Colin didn't seem like the first kind, and based on what she'd observed at the bar, he didn't seem like the second or third kinds either. Which meant, obviously, that he was either the fourth or fifth kind. He wasn't interested in her, and yet, deep down, she suspected that she might be wrong about that, though she wasn't sure why. Which left the possibility that he was in the fifth category, but unfortunately, she'd pretty much ended the conversation earlier. So maybe his silence was a reaction to her perceived standoffishness. After he'd changed her tire, after his friendly efficiency at the bar, after Serena had assured her that he was a nice guy, and after he'd initiated a conversation just a few moments earlier, she felt her shoulders slump. No wonder she spent her weekends alone. Hey, Colin? She tried again. He was still leaning over the railing, and when he turned after a moment, she detected the same trace of amusement she'd noticed in the bar. Yes?
May I ask you a question?
Yes.
His blue-gray eyes glowed like sea glass.
Why do you like fishing?
He reached up, tilting his hat back slightly. I guess I don't, really. And I'm not very good at it, either. I hardly ever catch anything.
She registered the soft precision of his speech.
Then why do you do it?
It's a good way to unwind after work, especially when it's busy. It's just nice to have a few minutes to myself, you know? I come out here and it's quiet and the world slows down for a while. I started bringing a pole because it gave me something to do instead of just standing out here and staring at the horizon.
Like I was doing?
Exactly. Would you like to borrow my pole? When she laughed under her breath, he went on. Besides, I think it made people nervous when I just stood out here brooding like I was up to no good. And earlier this week, with the bruises, I probably would have scared them too.
I'd like to think you came off as contemplative.
I doubt it. You, on the other hand, come across as the type who frequently contemplates things. Life, goals, dreams.
She flushed, feeling too tongue-tied to answer. Despite herself, she couldn't help agreeing with Serena. Colin was seriously hot. She shook the thought away, not wanting to go there.
Do you mind?
He said, motioning toward her before leaning over and grabbing his tackle box.
I'm not having a lot of luck over here.
His suggestion caught her off guard.
Yeah, sure. But if you're not very good at fishing, I can't promise this spot will be any better.
It probably won't be, he admitted, drawing near.
He set the tackle box beside him on the pier, leaving a comfortable distance between them.
But I won't have to talk so loud.
Unlike her, he seemed perfectly relaxed, and she watched as he reeled in his line and recast in a new location. He leaned forward, jerking the pole slightly.
Your sister has quite a personality, he said after a moment.
Why do you say that?
Her introduction to me included the words, "Hey, you with the hurt face."
Maria grinned, thinking that sounded exactly like Serena.
She's one of a kind, that's for sure.
But she's more like a friend than a sister, right?
Did she tell you that?
No, he said. I noticed it while I waited on the two of you. It's easy to tell you're pretty close.
We are,
Maria agreed.
Do you have siblings?
Two older sisters.
Are you close?
Not like you and Serena, he admitted as he adjusted the fishing line. I love them, and I care about them, but we kind of ended up taking different paths in life.
Which means?
We don't really talk that often. Maybe once every couple of months or so. It's been improving lately, but it's a gradual process.
That's too bad.
It is what it is, he said. His answer suggested he didn't really want to discuss it further.
Serena said that you and she are in class together?
She asked, venturing onto safer ground. He nodded. She caught up with me on the way to the library. I guess you must have told her how I looked that night and she put it all together, which wasn't too hard, what with a hurt face and all.
It wasn't so bad. I didn't really think much about it.
When he raised an eyebrow, she shrugged.
All right, so maybe I was a little scared when you walked up.
Makes sense. It was late and you were in the middle of nowhere. That's one of the reasons I stopped.
What was the other reason?
You were a girl.
And you think all girls need help changing a tire?
Not all girls, but my sisters and my mom would have needed help. And I didn't get the sense that you were having a lot of fun. She nodded.
Thank you again.
You already said that.
I know, but it deserved to be said a second time.
Okay.
Just okay?
The corners of her mouth turned up. It's my go-to phrase when someone makes a statement instead of asking a question. She wrinkled her forehead.
I suppose that makes sense.
Okay, he said, and despite herself, she laughed, finally beginning to relax.
Do you like bartending?
She asked.
It's all right, he answered.
It pays the bills while I'm in school. I can pretty much pick my schedule and the tips are good. But I hope I'm not forced to make it a career. There's more I want to do with my life.
Serena said you want to be a teacher.
I do, he agreed.
Where did she go, by the way? She met up with some friends. They'll troll the bars for a while and listen to music, then probably head off to a party or whatever.
Why didn't you join them?
I'm a little old for college parties, don't you think?
I don't know. How old are you?
28.
I'm 28, and I'm still in college.
Yeah, she thought. I know. And you go to college parties?
No, he conceded. But it's not because I think I'm too old. I just don't go to parties. Bars either.
But you work at a bar.
That's different.
Why?
Because I work there, and even if I didn't, it's not the kind of bar where I'd end up getting in trouble, since it's really more of a restaurant.
You get in trouble at bars?
I used to, he said. Not anymore.
But you just said you don't go.
And that's why I don't get into trouble.
How about clubs?
He shrugged. Depends on the club and who I'm with. Usually no. Every now and then, yes.
Because you get into trouble there too?
I have in the past. She puzzled over his answer before finally turning toward the horizon again. The moon glowed against the backdrop of a sky that was beginning its slow progression from gray to black. Colin followed her gaze, neither of them speaking for a moment.
What kind of trouble? She finally asked.
He lifted the tip of his reel, jerking the line before answering.
Fights,
he said. For a moment, she wasn't sure she'd heard him right.
You used to fight in bars?
Up until a few years ago, I used to fight in bars all the time.
Why would you get into fights?
Guys usually go to bars for four reasons. To get drunk, to hang with friends, to pick up girls, or to fight. I would show up for all four.
You wanted to fight?
Usually.
How many times?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
How many times did you get into fights?
I can't remember exactly. Probably over 100. She blinked.
You were in over 100 bar fights?
Yes. She wasn't sure what to say.
Why are you telling me this?
Because you asked.
And you answer everything that people ask you?
Not everything.
But you think telling me about something like this is okay?
Yes.
Why?
I'm guessing you're a lawyer, right?
She inhaled, thrown by the sudden change in subject.
Did Serena tell you that?
No.
Then how did you know I was a lawyer?
I didn't know. I thought it was a possibility because you ask a lot of questions. Most lawyers do.
And given all those bar fights, you've probably had a lot of experience with lawyers.
Yes.
I still can't believe you're telling me this.
Why wouldn't I tell you?
Because admitting that you used to get into bar fights isn't something that people usually do when they're first getting to know each other.
Okay, he said. But like I said, I don't do that anymore.
What about the other night?
That was an MMA match, mixed martial arts. It's entirely different from what I used to do in the past.
It's still fighting, isn't it?
It's a sport, like boxing or taekwondo.
She squinted at him. Is MMA the one in the cage where anything goes?
Yes to the first and no to the second, he said. There are rules. Actually, there are a lot of rules, even if it can be violent. And you enjoy the violence. It's good for me.
Why? Because it helps to keep you out of trouble?
Among other things. He smiled, and for the first time in a long, long while, she found herself utterly at a loss for words. Chapter 5. Colin. Colin had witnessed reactions like Maria's before, and he knew she was debating whether she should stick around. People generally had negative reactions to hearing about his past. While he no longer beat himself up for his mistakes, he wasn't proud of them either. He was who he was, warts and all, and he accepted that. Now it was her turn to make a decision. He knew that Evan would have shaken his head at the way Colin had answered her questions. But aside from Colin's desire to be honest, what Evan didn't understand was that trying to hide the truth about his past was futile, even if he wanted to keep it hidden. People were both curious and cautious, and he knew that a quick internet search using his name would yield a handful of newspaper articles about him, none of them good. And if he hadn't laid it out there from the beginning, either Maria or Serena might have Googled him in the same way Victoria had. He'd met Victoria at a gym a couple of years ago, and after chatting off and on for a few months, they'd fallen into occasionally working out together. He'd thought that they were getting along well and considered her a good training partner until she suddenly began to avoid him. She'd stopped returning his texts or calls and started working out in the morning instead of the evenings. When he was finally able to talk to her, she'd revealed what she'd learned about him and insisted that he stop trying to contact her. She hadn't been interested in excuses, and Colin hadn't offered any, but he did wonder why she'd conducted her internet research in the first place. It wasn't as though they'd been dating. He wasn't sure they'd even reached the friendship stage yet. A month later, she'd stopped coming to the gym at all, and that was the last he'd seen of her. She hadn't been the only one who'd shied away after learning the truth about Colin. And while Evan might joke that Colin immediately volunteered his full history to anyone who asked, it wasn't like that. It generally wasn't anyone else's business, and he kept it that way, unless someone was, or might become, part of his life somehow. Though it was way too early to tell whether Maria fell into that category, Serena was a classmate, and if she'd talked to him once, she just might talk to him again. He admitted that there was something about Maria that interested him, however. Part of it was the way she looked, of course. She was a more mature, more striking version of Serena, with the same dark hair and eyes. But at the bar, he'd noted her lack of vanity. Though she'd drawn stares from any number of men on the rooftop, she hadn't been aware of it, which was extremely rare. But his initial impressions ran deeper than that. Unlike Serena, who was bubbly and chatty and not really his type, Maria was quieter, more contemplative, and obviously intelligent. And now? He observed Maria as she tried to figure out whether she wanted to stay or go, continue the conversation, or say goodbye. He said nothing, giving her room to make her own decision. Instead, he concentrated on the feel of the breeze and the sound of the waves. Staring down the pier, he noticed that most of the people who'd been fishing had cleared out. Those who still remained were packing up their gear and cleaning their catch. Maria leaned a little farther over the railing. The darkening sky cast her face in shadow,
making her appear mysterious, unknowable. He watched as she drew a long breath.
"What other things?" she finally asked.
Colin smiled inwardly. "As much as I enjoy working out, there are times when I'm just not in the mood. But knowing that I have a match coming up and knowing I have to train for it gets me off the couch and into the gym."
"Every day?"
He nodded. "Usually two or three different sessions. It takes a lot of time."
"What do you do?"
"Almost anything," he said with a shrug. "A big chunk of my training is centered around striking and grappling, but after that I try to mix it up as much as I can. I do Olympic and heavy lifting, but I also do spin classes, yoga, kayaking, circuit work, running, rope climbs, stairs, plyometrics, bodyweight exercises, whatever. As long as I can break a sweat, I'm happy."
"You do yoga?"
"It's not only good for flexibility and balance, but it's great for me mentally. It's like meditating." He nodded at the water, burnished red gold in the last rays of the sun. "Kind of like being out here after a shift." She squinted at him.
"You don't look like a guy who does yoga. Guys who do yoga are..."
he finished for her. "Skinny, bearded, into things like incense and beads." She laughed.
"I was going to say they're usually not into violence."
"Well, neither am I. Not anymore. Obviously, injuries can happen during one of my fights, but I don't necessarily want to hurt anyone. I just want to win."
"Don't the two go together?"
"Sometimes, but not always. If you get your opponents in the right submission hold, they'll tap out and walk away good as new." She twirled the bracelet on her wrist.
"Is it scary, walking into that cage?"
"If you're scared, you probably shouldn't be getting into the ring in the first place. For me, it's more of a rush that gets the adrenaline flowing. The key is to keep the adrenaline under control." He began reeling in his line.
"I take it you're pretty good."
"I'm all right for an amateur, but I'd struggle in the pros. Some of those guys were NCAA-level wrestlers or Olympic boxers, and they're out of my league. But I'm fine with that. It's not my dream to go pro. It's just something to do until I graduate. When the time comes, I'll be ready to walk away." Instead of casting again, he fastened the hook and lure to the pole, then tightened the line. "And besides, teaching and cage fighting don't exactly mesh. I'd probably scare the little kids like I scared you."
"Little kids?"
"I want to teach third grade," he said. He bent over, reaching for his tackle box. "It's getting dark," he added. "You ready to head back, or would you like to stay out here a bit longer?"
"We can go,"
she said. As Colin set the pole on his shoulder, she noted the restaurants lit from within, lines of people already forming at the doors, the faint strains of music filling the air.
"It's starting to get crowded down here."
"That's why I asked to work the day shift. It'll be a zoo on the rooftop tonight."
"Good for tips, no?"
"Not worth the aggravation. Too many college kids." She laughed, the sound warm and melodic. They began to retrace the steps they'd taken earlier, neither feeling the need to rush. In the dimming light, she was alluring, her slight smile making him wonder what she was thinking. "Have you always lived here?" he asked, breaking the peaceful lull.
"I grew up here and moved back last December," she answered. "Between college, law school, and working in Charlotte, I was gone for about 10 years. You're not from here, though, right?"
"I'm from Raleigh," he said. "Spent summers here when I was a kid, lived here on and off for a month or two for a few years after high school. I've been living here permanently the last 3 years.
"We've probably been neighbors at times and didn't even know it. I went to UNC and Duke."
"Neighbors or not, I doubt we traveled in the same social circles," she smiled.
"So, you came here to go to college?"
"Not at first. College came a little after that. I came here because my parents kicked me out of the house and I wasn't sure where else to go. My friend Evan was living here and I ended up renting a room from him."
"Your parents kicked you out?"
He nodded. "I needed a wake-up call. They gave me one."
"Oh."
She tried to keep her voice neutral. "I don't blame them," he said. "I deserved it. I would have kicked me out too."
"Because of the fights?"
"There's more to it than just that, but the fights were part of it. I was kind of a problem child, and then after high school I was a problem adult for a while." He glanced over at her.
What about you? Do you live with your parents?
She shook her head. I have a condo down on Market Street.
As much as I love them, there's no way I could live with my parents. What do they do?
They own La Casina de la Familia. It's a restaurant here in town.
I've heard of it, but I haven't been there.
You should go. The food is really authentic. My mom still cooks a lot of it herself, and the place is always packed.
If I mention your name, will I get a discount?
Do you need a discount?
Not really. I'm just wondering how far we've progressed.
I'll see what I can do. I'm sure I'd be able to pull some strings.
By then, they were over the sand and headed for the stairs. He followed as she bounded gracefully down the steps.
Do you want me to walk you to your car?
He asked, meeting her gaze.
I'll be okay,
she demurred.
It's not far.
He moved the rod from one shoulder to the other, reluctant for the evening to end.
If Serena's going out with her friends, what are your plans for the rest of the night?
Nothing, really. Why?
Do you want to listen to some music? Since we're already here, it's not that late yet.
His question seemed to take her by surprise, and for a moment, he thought she might say no. She adjusted her purse strap, fidgeting with the buckle. While he waited, he thought again that she was beautiful, her long, dark lashes shrouding her thoughts.
I thought you didn't go to bars.
I don't, but we could walk the beach for a bit, listen for something good, and enjoy it where we are.
Are any of the bands any good?
I have no idea.
Uncertainty was written on her face before he saw something finally give way.
All right, but I don't want to stay long, maybe just a walk on the beach, okay? I don't want to be here when the crowds descend.
He smiled, feeling something unwind within him, and raised the tackle box.
Let me just drop this off, all right? I'd rather not carry it the whole time.
They backtracked to the restaurant, and once he stowed his things in the employee area, they wandered back down to the sand. The stars were beginning to emerge, brilliant pinpricks in the velvety sky. The waves continued their steady roll, and the warm breeze was like a quiet exhale. As they strolled, he was conscious of the fact that she was close enough to touch, but he pushed the realization away.
What kind of law do you practice?
Mainly insurance defense work, research and depositions, negotiation, and as a final resort, litigation.
And you defend insurance companies?
For the most part. Every now and then we're on the plaintiff's side, but it's not that common.
Does it keep you busy?
Very,
she nodded.
There's a policy for everything, and as much as the policy tries to anticipate every possibility, there are always gray areas. Let's say someone slips in your store and he sues, or an employee sues after getting fired, or maybe you're throwing a birthday party for your son and one of his friends gets hurt in your swimming pool. The insurance company is responsible for paying the claim, but sometimes they decide to fight the claim. That's where we step in, because the other side always has lawyers.
Do you ever go to court?
I haven't yet, not for this job anyway. I'm still learning. The partner I do most of my work for goes to court quite a bit, but truthfully, most of our cases are settled before they go to trial. In the end, it's cheaper and less hassle for everyone involved.
I'll bet you hear a lot of lawyer jokes.
Not too many, she said. Why, do you have one?
He took a couple of steps. How does a lawyer sleep? At her shrug, he said. First he lies on one side, then he lies on the other.
Ha ha.
I'm kidding.